Right, but it's all there for you. And Amara, I emailed it to you as well. So
perfect.
If you want to share it with anybody who is watching the recording later, we could do mm-hmm. that. Okay, so my job in the excise and license is a policy analyst, but I used to be, sorry, real quick, can we have people who aren't talking mute just so I don't get feedback? Thank you. So I used to be a city attorney in the city attorney's office. So I used to do these hearings, the liquor license hearings, the marijuana hearings. So I have some experience doing those, which really helps when we need to update our policies and procedures and make sure that they are fair and useful. So this presentation is only about 10 slides, but it's just to give a general overview of just kind of how the process works. And, you know, some options available to RNOs. And then there's a lot more nitty gritty than we'll go over, but I'll give you the resources you need to look things up. And definitely feel free to reach out to me or Maggie, and Maggie can reach out to me if you have any specific questions ever in the future about a particular hearing. So on slide two kind of shows what we'll go over. So first we'll talk about the process for licensing hearings, and then we'll talk about our guiding document, the hearing policies and procedures. Then we'll talk about some resources for prior to the hearing and after the hearing, things to know, terminology to be familiar with, and then finally some additional information. So slide three talks about the licensure process. So when we talk about public hearings to get a license, either for liquor or marijuana, are the two main popular ones. It's part of a larger process that we have in our department. So just wanted to put that in context, kind of that 30,000 foot view. Always starts with an application from that applicant, right? The person who wants to open a new business, to sell liquor, to sell marijuana, they put in that application, and usually the requirements for what needs to be in that application are set in ordinance by city council or enrolled by the agency. So it just depends on which license they're applying for. Once they submit that application, we do an agency review. So we will, you know, kind of check to make sure that they have provided all of the required documents, make sure that everything's included that needs to be included, have them, you know, submit any missing documents if there's anything missing, and make sure they've got a complete application. Once that application is complete, we then comes notice. We want people to know that there's going to be a hearing, right? So that includes some things that we'll go over in a future slide, but notice both to city council, RNOs, and then letting the applicant know obviously when to show up for their hearing. The next phase that comes is that public hearing, which some of you may have been involved with. Oh, great. Thank you. If we can go to the next slide. Thank you. At the public hearing, we'll kind of talk about some documents that, you know, are relevant to that hearing, things that can be counted as evidence, and then what comes after the hearing. Once that public hearing process is complete, then our inspectors will go out and make sure that things are as the applicant says they'll be. And then if that is the case, then finally that license is issued. So that's kind of the full process front to back, kind of what we do with all of our licenses that have a public hearing. So this is the process followed for all new liquor, all new marijuana, and that includes marijuana and liquor common consumption. This does not apply, however, to special event hearings automatically. The special event permits only get a hearing if the community requests one. So we'll kind of talk about how to do that. The main thing, if you walk away from this presentation with any knowledge whatsoever, I want it to be that, you know, all of your questions should be answered or should, we hope that they're answered in the hearing policies and procedures that we created for the department. So it's about a 65-page document, and it covers general hearing procedures that are specific to needs and desires hearings, which are the types of hearings for liquor or marijuana. And what they do is they interpret and implement state statutes and municipal ordinances. So the state has the state laws. And then on top of that, each jurisdiction, each county and city with a licensing department can make their own laws through the legislative process. This is just an additional document that provides, on top of what the law is, what are our standard practices in the department? So that if you are participating in a hearing, you know what to expect. Because a lot of people that want to participate, it's their first time. And so they're not sure what the protocol is, and we want everyone to be on the same page. So I'll send those tomorrow as an attachment, but you can also find those on our website. So when we talked about the process before the hearing happens, kind of the first step that most neighbors get, you know, privy to the process, unless the applicant has told them that they're applying, is that notification. So notification comes in three different ways through the city. So the first is a notice packet, and that is sent by our department. We send those to what are called parties in interest. And parties in interest is just the term that we use to refer to the people who are interested in the decision by law, and we include those definitions in the policies and procedures. They differ a little between marijuana and liquor and some other license types, but generally they include the applicant, the person who's applying for the license, any RNO whose boundaries overlap, any portion of the designated area, which is the neighborhood surrounding the business, and then city council members for the district where that license is or is going to be. A few things that are different. Denver Public Schools receives all liquor license notification packets, and Denver Police receive cabaret license packets. And that a cabaret is a license for dancing or entertainment where there is also a liquor license. So usually places that are a little bit louder. So that first, the first thing we do is send that notice packet, and that provides a ton of information. It has an applicant letter that goes over the date, the time of the hearing, the section of the hearing, policies and procedures that pertain, petition forms, things like that. And it usually tells you who your licensing technician is. So the person who's going to know all the details about the hearing, it's usually Sharon or Bruce, and who you can contact with questions. Additionally, we know some people might not receive that email if they're not in an RNO, and we don't have any way to know that they'd be interested. So we require the applicant to post notice of the hearing at the location. Those signs have to be in a conspicuous place. They have to be pretty big, clearly visible to the public. And we outline some requirements for that signage in the policies and procedures. Additionally, different license types have to be posted for a certain number of days. I think the state minimum for liquor licenses is 10, but we have increased that to make sure that there's a little bit more time for RNOs and citizens to notice that sign before there's a hearing. Finally, the third place we give notice is in the Daily Journal, which is a newspaper of general circulation that is required by law. We know that, you know, some people, again, maybe they don't walk around, but they do know where to look for notifications. And we also try to make these available on our website, although sometimes, obviously, there are maintenance issues or technology freezes. So we try to keep that as up to date as we can. Every once in a while, we do see a glitch, but it's usually pretty accurate. So those are the three places you can get notice. Now, what happens once you see a notice or you get a notice? What kinds of actions can you, as a citizen, a resident in the neighborhood, or a member of an RNO, what can you do? Here are just some different options. These are the most common that are in our HPPs. So one is requesting an evening hearing. So at the hearing, the applicant will have to provide some neighborhood witnesses to talk about the need and the desire for the license to issue. If there's opposition, the opposition can also do that. However, we know that in both cases, there are people who have day jobs. They can't come down to the department. They want to testify either in support or in opposition, and they just can't make it work with their schedule. So Section 2.2.2 of the Hearing Policies and Procedures talks about how evening hearings can be requested. This is one thing, I will send this out tomorrow too, but we have an emergency memo that we put out kind of modifying a few sections that deal with requirements due to the pandemic. This is something that has been made easier to request due to the pandemic. We know that it might be harder to get signatures for a petition for an evening hearing. Usually you need 15, and that might be just more difficult with people staying at home. So we have removed that requirement, but you can still request an evening hearing. Another popular option is for RNOs to negotiate a good neighbor agreement. This is a private contract between the applicant and the RNO, so it's enforceable in municipal court, just like any other contract, civil contract between two people. But this is where you can really negotiate some specifics of the license. So for example, you know, the business is going to be someplace that has loud music or live entertainment, and the neighborhood just wants to make sure that maybe that ends by midnight rather than 2 a.m. This would be a place for you, for RNOs to negotiate some of those terms. One thing that we don't really get a lot of, but is an option, if there are legal issues, for example, with qualifications for either a transfer of ownership or sometimes a new marijuana license, parties can issue or can file what's called a pre-hearing brief to talk about those issues so that the hearing officer knows ahead of time to do that research. And I'm sorry, I'm going to have to move my computer so I can plug it in. But we don't often see those, but it is an option that I like to talk about just in case people are faced with, you know, extensive circumstances and they're not sure how to get that information in ahead of time. Finally, another popular option is to circulate petitions. This is a great way to show that there is a need and a desire, or there is not a need and a desire for a license to issue. And there's instructions and forms that go out with every notice packet. So, you know, if you are in an RNO or you're a citizen and you maybe haven't seen the notice packet because you're not on the mailing list, you can always reach out to your city council person and they will have that email with the forms, with the instructions and everything about how to circulate petitions. Any questions about that? No? Okay. We'll take questions at the end too, but we'll go on for now. If we could get next slide. Thank you. So here's some things that can change. You know, additionally, once you have notice and once you've kind of got those initial options sorted out, these are some requests that can be made to make accommodations for, you know, different people. So, well, the first and foremost is that we do offer interpretive services. So any applicant, licensee, party in interest, meaning, you know, RNO members or community members, or the city attorney can request a foreign language interpreter for any hearing we hold. Those requests have to be in writing, and typically they have to be submitted 10 days before the hearing date because we usually have a pretty full schedule. However, the emergency memo reduced that to 5 days so that you know, community members could have more time before hearing to request that. You can also request a continuance. This is pretty common if somebody has some kind of circumstances that are out of the party's control or there's a significant change to the application. For example, if an applicant has agreed to execute a good neighbor agreement with the RNO prior to their hearing and, you know, 3 days before the hearing, they say, just kidding, we're not going to sign that document. We don't want to agree to those terms. The RNO can write the department and say, hey, we would like to request a continuance. This totally changes our position on the application. And that's usually something that the hearing officers will grant. They're pretty, you know, flexible with that. They understand that life happens, circumstances change. Another issue that we've seen continuances granted for RNOs is if they want to obtain legal counsel. Usually that doesn't happen often, but if something fishy is going on and they want representation at the hearing, they will grant a continuance so that the lawyer has time to catch up.
Quick question.
Sure.
How long do you have to request the continuance? Like, is that 3 days before or?
I think, I mean, the more time, the better, but I don't think there's a time limit on that just because we know that, you know, sometimes things come up the day before.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I think each request is considered on a case-by-case basis, but we don't have a standard of number of days. If it's the day of, it's kind of tricky, but usually if you can get it in at least a day ahead of time, the hearing officers are pretty good about granting those. The applicant can always request to withdraw their application, even after it's been scheduled for public hearing. Those requests also have to be made in writing so that, you know, if you want to see that, you can see that. However, if an applicant goes through the hearing process and has the public hearing and then they request to withdraw that application, those are typically denied. I haven't seen one that's been granted, and that's because the director is very concerned with making sure that there are certain licenses that carry with them circumstances. So if that license is denied on the basis of a lack of need and desire, there are waiting periods before they can apply again. And so if somebody goes through a hearing and sees that there's not support for the license to be issued in the area, we don't want to be able to have them withdraw because that takes away that waiting period. So we don't want to do that. So that's one good thing to know, that after you go through the hearing, they can't just withdraw their application and reset that timeline. And then finally, the request for the evening hearing. In the HPPs, this request must be made in writing at least 15 days prior. I think we reduced that to 5 with the emergency memo due to COVID, so that people wouldn't be forced to basically initially see the posting and have to get that in right away. They have a little bit more time to breathe. So at the hearing, we get a lot of questions about the test, who can give testimony and what weight it's given. And so these are all outlined in the hearing policies and procedures, but here's kind of a breakdown. So city council members can always testify and provide evidence. However, they can additionally cross-examine witnesses at marijuana hearings. Now, at liquor license and cabaret hearings, their testimony is unweighted, so that means that the hearing officer can't take that into consideration when they make their decision. But it is good, it's a good way for a city council member to, you know, voice their opinion. However, their testimony is weighted in marijuana hearings. Can you guys still hear me? Okay, my screen just gave me a notice. Okay. RNOs. So this is probably what you guys care most about, but RNOs can provide weighted testimony and evidence at liquor, cabaret, and marijuana hearings. So that means that you can testify as to the need or the desire of the license to issue. In addition, at marijuana hearings, you can cross-examine witnesses of the applicant. So as I mentioned, the applicant usually provides neighborhood witnesses that talk about why the license is needed or desired. In the case of marijuana hearings, RNOs have an opportunity to cross-examine that same witness and ask them questions.
I have one question, just looking forward, and just a thing that we've thought about as our neighborhood. Is the weight ever higher for an RNO versus for like a single resident or anything along those lines?
It's case by case. It's not something that we lay out in the policies and procedures. It's just by law what the hearing officer can consider or cannot consider. And it's very strange that state law, for example, gives city council members an opportunity to testify at liquor hearings, but the hearing officer can't take that into account. It's more of a public service than a factor in the licensing decision. But weighted just means that the hearing officer must take it into account whenever they're making the decision on what process to recommend.
Awesome. Thank you for clarifying that.
Just to jump in there, just one random thing. So far in the last like almost 5 years, Jolan has stayed out of liquor license hearings because he feels like they're kind of something that maybe he doesn't want to choose sides on and that the community should work out. So he typically doesn't testify or write letters or anything like that for a liquor hearing. He will do some stuff occasionally for marijuana, as you guys have seen with things like vape and play. But in my experience, a good example might be of how, how a hearing officer could see an individual versus an RNO. What if it's the individual who lives behind a business that's applying for a cabaret license versus the whole RNO or something, they have different opinions or something like that. I've seen some things like that happen, but typically, yeah, it's a case by case kind of, what are the facts, what's going on?
Yes. Awesome, thank you, Maggie.
Absolutely. And then just so you guys know, residents and business owners and business managers of businesses in the designated area can provide that weighted testimony and evidence and they need to cross-examine that liquor, cabaret, and marijuana. So this is something we get asked a lot about, or we get, you know, pushback on, well, if somebody manages a business, why is their testimony given the same way as my testimony when I live there and they go home at the end of the day? And that's something that's not in our power to change at the city level. That's a state law. And so it's, I hear you on that one. I think it is a distinction that matters. It's something you can always bring up when you give testimony, and a hearing officer will, you know, do with that what seems appropriate to them. But, you know, it's not something we can change, unfortunately. It is something that is in state law. And I will try to wrap up shortly here. I know you have other things on your agenda. So what happens after the hearing? This is something that I think is really helpful for our nurses to be familiar with, you know, because it gives them an expectation of what pieces of paper am I looking for, and what happens when, you know, what is actually the final decision, right? So after hearing, that hearing officer acts as like a judge, an independent fact finder. They hear all the evidence, they hear the testimony, they judge the, you know, credibility of the witnesses. And then what they do is they summarize all of that in what's called a recommended decision. So they provide that summary of what happened at the hearing. They provide relevant citations to any law that needs to be cited. And they recommend to the director of the department, I think you either should issue this license or you should deny this application. And then the reasons why, you know, using the legal standards. That recommended decision gets sent to the applicant and any known parties in interest. So anyone that received the notice packet will also receive the recommended decision. And anyone who signs up at the hearing, say, you know, someone in the neighborhood not affiliated with an RO, just signs in, they want to know what happens with the license, they can get that as well via email. From that recommended decision, anyone who reads it and says, wait, that's not the right answer, they didn't even consider this, or they got this wrong, or they didn't apply that correctly, you can write an objection. Any party in interest can write that objection. So sometimes it's the applicant's objecting, sometimes it's RNO's objecting, and they can submit those applications within 10 days of that recommended decision. Those objections will be shared with everybody, just like the recommended decision was, just to be fair, so everyone knows what documentation is going back and forth. And then anyone who, you know, agrees with the hearing officer or has something to add, they can respond to that objection. So, for example, if the hearing officer recommends that a license not be issued, the applicant will probably usually be the one to say, I object, I want that license, and here's why I deserve it. And the RNO may say, now, wait a minute, that's crazy. The hearing officer was right, and here's why. They can file a response with the department. So what happens to all those documents? They get shared with everybody who is interested in knowing the outcome, all the parties in interest, and then all of that gets taken in the licensing file and given to the director of the department. And so if you've ever heard Ashley Kilroy say, hey, I can't talk to you about this, I'm the final decision maker, it's because there are rules and laws about her having ex-party communication with any, you know, anyone. She can't talk to the applicant, she can't talk to the RNO. She has to remain fully unbiased until she gets that file so that she can read everything that everybody else has had a chance to read and respond to, and that she's not having private conversations with anybody about the decision.
It's really so difficult when we have a rezoning and Jolin is in that quasi-judicial role, and so he can't do anything outside of what happens that night and what goes on the record in city council. So it's kind of a similar construct.
Exactly. And it's all in the interest of fairness so that everybody involved is privy to all of the communications. That's why everyone gets the recommended decision. Everyone gets any objections and responses. And then the director will issue the final decision. That's the final agency action. That's the thing that says this license shall be issued or it shall be denied. And so that's kind of her final view of, I've looked at everything, I have taken into account all the evidence, all the things that people have said, and here's the decision. So I know that was a lot to cover. There's a lot more in the HPPs. I'm going to send Mara, I sent her the slides and the emergency memo, but I'm also going to send a link to the HPPs and a link to subscribe. This is our liquor licensing bulletin. if you're super nerdy and want to know about any changes to our liquor rules or code, this is where you sign up. We don't provide information on specific hearings here. You know, those are all included in those notice packets, but this is more general, changes to policy, things like that, if you want to stay in the loop. And then any questions, that's my email. Feel free to contact me, bug me. If I don't answer fast enough, bug me again. I'm always happy to talk to RNOs and community members so that they are, you know, in the loop, they know what to expect, and they can, you know, feel confident going into their hearing.
Awesome. I just wanted to give a huge plug for Erica because she responded to an email I sent, I think on like Monday, saying, hey, we'd really love to have you at one of our upcoming neighborhood meetings. And she was on board for coming in and presenting today, the same week that we requested. And really the reasoning for this was I got a chance to look at this same presentation. Valverde had requested a chance, Valverde Neighborhood Association had requested a chance to do the same training or presentation. And it was awesome. And especially with how many marijuana businesses are in our neighborhood and how many, like recently we've approved quite a few liquor licenses in our neighborhood. Well, like two, quite a few. But still, I think that process has been really daunting for us, and it can be really, really nerve-wracking not knowing exactly what you're doing, especially when you show up to a liquor hearing. And I know Paul's had this experience where they have a very clear like rule. You say, you know, you say your name, you have to swear, you know, that you're going to tell the truth and nothing but the truth. And it can feel like, you know, if you're not prepared for it or don't know what is being requested or who can speak and are you in the designated area or not, it gets really confusing really fast. So I found this really helpful. Actually, I was going to ask you, Erica, is there any just like a really brief like how-to document about like telling someone who's never been in a hearing, this is what's going to happen. Like, you're going to be asked to swear. You're going to probably stand up or, you know, something like that to give you a heads up. It's probably in that giant document you sent, huh?
Well, no, that's a great question. I mean, the hearing policies and procedures are, they can be daunting as well, even though they're meant to be a guide. But we did one years ago, and it's so out of date now, but pre-COVID, we were talking about, you know, updating it. And of course, now we've had to change everything for virtual hearings. So, you know, it's a whole new set of rules, not a whole new set of rules, but a whole new what to expect kind of thing. So that is something that we are working on putting together for virtual hearings. And then ideally, you know, at some point when we go back to in-person hearings, being able to update that. Now, if you guys have ideas or you're like, I had a really bad experience at a hearing and here's what happened and here's what would make it more accessible for community members, that is my whole job. Well, not my whole job. I have other things. But I mean, within the hearing, you know, setting, that is what I'm here for. I'm a resource. If you or other RNO members or other community members are like, this particular provision is archaic, no one does it this way anymore, it would be helpful if you did this. Come to me, tell me, I will advocate for some changes. You know, we do a review periodically of the HPPs and we update them. So if we don't get feedback, we don't update them. So if you have problems, do tell me.
Awesome. Paul, you have something to say.
Yeah, and I don't know if this is the time to go into this, but I'm the one who testified at the liquor license hearing for the RNO. And it was a very, very challenging experience because I don't even know if I should get into it, but a competing business came in with like 30 witnesses. A lot of these witnesses were basically their employees or friends in the neighborhood. So me representing the RNO, and I don't know who else was there, basically we were just totally outgunned and overwhelmed. And honestly, I did not know how to handle it in a situation like that. So seeing this presentation, I recognize that we need to better be prepared.
So, Paul, would you be willing, maybe we can set up some time just to chat one-on-one on the phone about your experience and maybe some things that would have helped you?
Certainly. That would be great. Okay. And maybe that's the best way.